Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020. Section A. Percentage of people voting on Election Day drops. By Stuart Doreen. For some people, voting on Election Day is a tradition. Forget the days and weeks of early voting. That's not their style. They live for days like today. But in Midland County, the numbers of Election Day holdouts is going down, at least percentage-wise. The last four presidential elections show that the Election Day turnout has fallen every 4 years. What was around one-third, or 33%, in 2004, dropped to close to one-fifth, or 21.33%, in 2016. And this election season, the percentage could be dropping more. After an extended early voting period, the Midland County Elections Office reported 46,139 voters cast a ballot. That was about 7,000 more than 2016. Adding in the mailed-in ballots, it will take about 150 votes to reach the total number of votes cast in 2016, 49,698, early voting and Election Day. Heading into today, Midland County Elections Office officials report receiving 49,548 ballots. Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves told the Reporter-Telegram that her office promotes participation during the early voting period so Midlanders can avoid the long lines on Election Day. She also said it is important to vote early as one never knows what might happen if a person waits until the final day to make their vote count. Graves said long waits can be avoided for those voting today as there are plenty of options. She said Monday that the Horseshoe Education Building should be able to accommodate a large number of voters because there will be two check-in stations there. She also said Mid-Cities Church in West Midland has a big area for voting. All total, Graves said there are 21 locations, so not everyone needs to go to either the Annex Building on A Street or the Centennial Branch of the Midland County Library. Two locations known for their long lines. Graves said Midland County residents made use of all five early voting locations, something she hopes happens again with the Election Day voting centers. Inside Midland County, any person can go to any voting center to cast a ballot. Voters aren't restricted to a polling place based on their precinct. Don't come here to the annex, and don't go to the places where you know it will be busy, Graves said. There is no need to stand in line for hours. If you vote, for those voting today, Graves made the following recommendations. Bring an ID. It is required. A list of the options that can be used for an ID can be found by going to the Midland County Elections Office website. Put the mobile phone away. Voters can't use a cell phone to make a call or get a picture or video while waiting in line or while voting. If your t-shirt, sweater, ball cap, pin, or even your mask is political, leave it at home or in the car. Electioneering, taking part actively and energetically in the activities of an election campaign, is not allowed. Wear a mask. This isn't a mandate, but a recommendation to keep voters and those working at a location safe. MDC Board hears update on physician recruitment efforts by Mella McEwen. Members of the Midland Development Corporation Board received an update Monday on the success of the MDC's physician recruitment partnership with Midland Memorial Hospital. Karen Keene, manager, physician recruitment at Midland Health, told board members during their virtual monthly board meeting that 11 physicians were recruited to start their practice in fiscal year 2020. Those 11 physicians will support 187 jobs, $15.4 million in wages and benefits, and just shy of $1.4 million in local and state tax revenues. They will also support just over $2.5 million per capita economic output of patient care. Three additional physicians are scheduled to start in fiscal year 2021. Among the recruits are Dr. Rick Reynolds, a neurologist with family in Odessa, who will begin his practice in January. Dr. Orlando Garner, an intensivist who did his residency at Texas Tech Health Science Center in Odessa, will complete his critical care fellowship next July and begin his practice in August. Dr. Emily Baker, a Midland native, is also scheduled to complete her family medicine residency next July and open her practice in August. Keene said challenges remain in recruiting physicians in the field of neurology, pulmonary critical care, and gastroenterology. Board members authorized the reimbursement of $250,156.46 to the Midland County Hospital District under the agreement between the district and MDC. This was the last to be made under the terms of the agreement, which has not been amended or renewed, according to Sarah Harris, MDC Director of Operations. She told the Reporter Telegram that MDC staff will receive guidance on anything related to the physician recruitment agreement from MDC board members and or the City Council. Russell Myers, Midland Health President and Chief Executive Officer, told board members the physician recruitment reimbursements from the MDC have been hugely beneficial. There has been a good bit of discussion about the cost of physician recruitment, Myers told MDC board members. There are a couple of things to keep in mind. One, we sincerely appreciate all you do to support us. It's tremendously beneficial. Secondly, there's a lot more cost to bringing new physicians to the area than the MDC is funding. You pay upfront costs, travel, signing bonuses. Each doctor has an income guarantee, and that's always in the six figures, sometimes in the high six figures, depending on the specialty. In almost every case, it requires at least several months of payments while the doctors ramp up their practices and begin to generate professional fees. In some cases, that lasts forever because some specialists never generate enough income to be self-supporting. King told board members she has observed some physicians wanting to leave larger cities for smaller markets amid the COVID-19 pandemic. MDC Executive Director John Truschitti said the agreement between the MDC and the hospital has caught the attention of Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, which is now forming a similar partnership with the Odessa Development Corporation and looking to Midland as a model. Board members also approved a three-year promotional agreement with the Midland Downtown Farmers Market that calls for $40,000 to be paid the first year, $20,000 the second, and $10,000 the third year. Board members amended the proposed agreement to provide each payment be paid semi-annually with an annual report from the MDFM to MDC board members and MDFM to report to MDC staff 90 days before each payment. Their pitch last month was $30,000 a year for 3 years, Truschitti told board members. After receiving feedback, it was decided to front-load the payments and phase out support. This will provide support to the farmers market as the small entrepreneurs who participate cope with the financial impact of the pandemic, and also will give MDFM staff the opportunity to find other funding sources, he said. Board members tabled until next month the execution of a consultant services agreement with the Geisinger Group Partners LP for services related to the recruitment of a director of project development for the MDC. Board members said further investigation was needed, as well as consultation with City Council members on the agreement. Planning and Zoning denies housing-related requests by Mella McEwen. Two housing-related requests before the Planning and Zoning P&Z Commission failed during Monday's virtual meeting. a request by S.W. Howell for approval of a proposed preliminary plat that would turn two lots into one at West Griffin Avenue and South Fisher Street failed for lack of a motion to approve or deny. After some discussion, commissioners voted 5-1 to deny a request by Jorge Chavez for a zone change from RR, Regional Retail District, to SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, in order to build homes at 307 and 309 South La Mesa Road. Commissioners cited concerns raised by the city's transportation department about residents of the homes trying to exit their driveways onto La Mesa Road, which is an arterial road. Commission Chair Reggie Lawrence told Chavez that concerns went beyond the impact of construction materials while the homes were built to the traffic issues caused by daily mail or package delivery. There is only one home within a block or two of that property, Lawrence said. If you go further north up La Mesa or west, there are only two other homes that actually face La Mesa, and one of those may be a business, so that's a maximum of three. I commend anyone attempting to improve these properties. I think it's a great idea. I tend to lean toward the transportation issues and concerns. It's a heavily traveled road. Even if alleyway were paved, there would definitely still be a need for mail, UPS, and FedEx drop-off. If you have 40 homes go up and down La Mesa, there would be some issues. Commissioners approved a request from Curly Fry Holdings, LLC, which does business as Murray's Deli, for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. Murray's has had a specific use designation for the sale of wine and beer since 1993, but the change was made because of a change of ownership. Murray's Deli is also seeking to change its hours of operation to 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Sunday. Similarly, commissioners approved a request by J.E. Midland Ops, LLC, which operates Jimmy's Egg at 1910 North Loop 250 West for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. Catherine Chambly, representing the applicants, said Jimmy's Egg serves breakfast and lunch and wanted to add alcohol service to compete with other restaurants offering similar service. Protesters leave home of Midland pastor after a month of picketing, by Caitlin Randall. The protesters who had been picketing for a month outside the home of Midland pastor Bob Fu are gone, though there's a possibility they may return following Election Day. There were no protesters on Fu Street in Polo Park Monday, and the only traces left of the almost 30 days they'd spent demonstrating there were a patrol vehicle parked a block away and "We Are Bob Fu" signs placed in the neighbors' yards to show support for Fu. But it's possible the protests haven't ended permanently. Fu told the Reporter-Telegram Monday that some of the protesters have posted on social media that they are going to Washington, D.C. to await the results of the presidential election and will return later. Fu said he is still receiving death threats from followers of Miles Guo, the Chinese billionaire who has accused Fu and others of being spies for the Chinese Communist Party, and he and his family are remaining under police protection at a location outside Midland. "They said they will never leave unless I'm imprisoned," he said of the protesters. The last month has been difficult for his family, Fu said, with his children unable to go to school and his mother-in-law receiving treatment at Midland Memorial Hospital, which he attributed to anxiety about the situation his family is in. "The greatest toll of this saga, already near a month, has been our family is really stressed out," he said. Fu said they were upset by the idea of not being able to return home before Thanksgiving and spend the holiday with their family in Midland. The apparent break in protests came a day before Midland City Council is set to consider an ordinance prohibiting residential picketing. If approved, the ordinance will change police regulations for the city of Midland to make residential picketing and targeted marches adjacent to a residence or dwelling of an individual an offense punishable by a maximum penalty of a $500 fine. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton has said during a press conference October 15th, that the city and police department were exploring ways to stop the protests without infringing on protesters' First Amendment rights to free speech. The Midland City Council meeting will be held 10 a.m. Tuesday over a Zoom video conference. City reports 238 new cases and 2 deaths. The Midland Health Department reported Monday a new high for announced COVID-19 cases in one day, 238. The total was 6 more than the previous high, announced October 26th, and is reflective of lab results from part of the day Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. At the same time, the City of Midland reported another 2 deaths, bringing the total to 98 during the pandemic. The 97th patient was a man in his 70s who was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The 98th patient was a woman in her 80s who was being treated at Manor Park. Both died Monday, and both had underlying health conditions, according to the city. The health department also reported 2,263 active cases, an increase of 133 compared to Friday, and 3,153 recoveries, an increase of 102 compared to Friday. The number of total cases in Midland County during the pandemic jumped to 5,778. Election Day Voting Centers, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. today. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston. Cotton Flat Church, 6409 Highway 349. County Annex Courtroom, 2100 North A. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. Fellowship Community Church, 5206 North Midland Drive. Golf Course Road Church of Christ, 3500 West Golf Course Road. Grace Presbyterian Church, 2801 North Garfield. Greater Ideal Life Center, 301 South Tyler. Greenwood Baptist Church, 10908 FM 307 Greenwood. Holy Cross Lutheran Church, 5110 North Garfield. Horseshoe Complex Education Building, 2514 Arena Trail. MCPL Midland County Public Library, Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Midland County Public Library Downtown, 301 West Missouri. Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 191. Midland Chin Baptist Church, 2800 Louisiana. Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway Drive. Presence Church, 901 North Midland Drive. St. Paul's Methodist, 4501 Thomason Drive. Stonegate Fellowship, 6000 West Wadley. The Orchard Church, 6112 North Big Spring. Rural Texans Have Long Helped Republicans. Will That Hold True Today? By Patrick Svitek and Alex Samuels of Texas Tribune. Rural Texas saved Ted Cruz in 2018. Will it save Donald Trump today? That is one of the defining questions as Texas barrels toward what could be its closest presidential race since 1976, or the first time the state picks a Democratic presidential nominee since then. The story of Texas politics in 2020 is about the cities becoming bluer, the suburbs becoming more competitive, and the Latino vote rising. But it is also about a rural firewall that has kept Republicans in power for so long. Rural areas of the state have historically been Republicans' strongest line of defense in Texas, as polls show suburbs, even in traditionally red areas, shifting toward Democrats. But with the state's changing demographics and a noticeable surge of Democratic energy in deep Trump country, there's an open question of whether Republicans can hold on to these districts with the same large margins they did in 2016. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who chairs Trump's reelection campaign in Texas, called into a Lubbock radio show Thursday with an explicit appeal to rural Texans. The margins will depend on all of our great friends and our patriots in West Central and East Texas who say, "I don't want the president just to win. I want him to stomp the Democrats here, 75-25, Patrick told host Chad Hastie. And the biggest rural Texas votes will determine the final margin he wins by. Is it 4? Is it 6? Is it 8? Is it 3? In 2018, Cruz needed the state's rural counties to fend off a blockbuster challenge by Democrat Beto O'Rourke. The former El Paso congressman defeated Cruz 51% to 48% in the non-rural counties, which Trump carried by 3 points in 2016. But Cruz held strong in the rural counties and carried them 75 to 24%, nearly identical to Trump's margin in them 2 years earlier. No one expects Smith County, which includes Tyler, to flip to Democratic control after Trump bested Hillary Clinton by more than 67 percentage points in 2016. And no one doubts the passion of GOP voters in red enclaves across the historically Republican counties across Texas and the South. Texas is dominated by Republicans in all levels of state government. The problem for Republicans is that rural Texas is making up a shrinking share of the statewide vote, as population growth largely favors the cities and suburbs. Rural counties contributed 13% of the statewide vote in 2014, 12% in 2016, and 11% in 2018. And the GOP dominance has not gone unanswered in rural Texas, where Democrats have made investments to at least cut down on their deficits there. Republicans are in trouble out here, said Stuart Williams, the West Texas organizer for the Texas Democratic Party. Trump won in places like Lubbock in 2016 at the lowest level that any Republican had won since 1996. And that was 4 years ago, before we all saw what can happen to our country. Biden's campaign has made some overtures to rural Texas. In mid-October, the campaign hosted a rural Texas community conversation with Tom Vilsack, the former U.S. Agriculture Secretary and Iowa Governor. And the campaign did a three-day surrogate bus tour last week, whose first three stops were in Amarillo, Lubbock, and Abilene. The tour was derailed Friday after a highway skirmish with Trump supporters south of Austin. The Lincoln Project, the anti-Trump group run by former Republican operatives, has also sought to help Biden in rural Texas. In early October, the organization announced a $1 million ad campaign called Operation Sam Houston that was aimed at over 600,000 suburban and rural Republican women in Texas. The divide between rural and non-rural Texas does not just matter for the presidential race. It is poised to factor into other statewide contests, including those for U.S. Senate and a seat on the Railroad Commission, which regulates the Texas oil and gas industry. In the U.S. Senate election, Republican incumbent John Cornyn has been prioritizing more conservative rural parts of the state in the closing days of his reelection campaign. He is in the middle of a statewide bus tour whose itinerary is largely filled with cities like Wichita Falls and Tyler. "We're counting on you," Cornyn said Thursday in Tyler. "We're depending on Tyler, Smith County, and East Texas to win this." Cornyn's Democratic rival, MJ Heger, said Saturday she was not concerned at all about a repeat of 2018 when rural Texas rescued an otherwise vulnerable Republican U.S. senator. "I grew up in rural Texas, and I know what rural Texas needs," said Heger, who was raised in Williamson County, north of Austin, when it was less suburban than it is today. "It's why I'm running for office. Rural Texas is hurting because of a lack of access to education and health care, two of the biggest employers in rural Texas. Rural agriculture Texas is hurting because of the China trade war that we're losing right now because of ineffective leadership from the top down." Democrats say they are also appealing to rural voters with issues such as broadband internet access. Republicans, meanwhile, say their rural voters are energized by Trump's follow-through on campaign promises to restrict abortion and appoint conservative judges. Republican congressional nominees who do not have competitive races, many from rural areas, have nonetheless hit the campaign trail hard this fall to try to maximize their district's vote for Trump. Right after securing the GOP nomination for the 4th District at a convention in August, Pat Fallon gave a speech in which he said Republicans in the largely rural Northeast Texas district need to make sure we run up the score in CD4 so we can help President Trump carry this state and save our country. It's also the mission of Ronnie Jackson, the former White House doctor, who is set to become the next congressman from Texas' 13th district, the reddest in the country. While Jackson's election is all but guaranteed today, he said he has been impressing upon voters that they still need to show up for Trump. I think it's going to be absolutely crucial, Jackson said. Texas 13, 19, 11, these three big rural congressional districts out here in West Texas and the Texas Panhandle, we really are the firewall that keeps Texas red. It's just overwhelmingly Republican out here, and that really does make a difference statewide. Among Democrats, there's optimism that Biden-backing allies in rural Texas could not only prevent Trump from recreating his overwhelming 2016 margins in white working-class areas, the kind of support that offset his losses in the suburbs and among voters of color 4 years ago, but also make Trump's path to victory in Texas all the more difficult. I'm also seeing a pretty substantial uptick in folks volunteering with Democratic adjacent organizations, said Amy Hull, 42, who lives in Tarrant County. It's been interesting to see people who were pretty turned out 4 years ago become unapologetic about their politics and determined to do everything possible to make our community, state, and country government work better for everyone. Republicans could especially take heart in rural areas that have only grown more red in recent election cycles. Take, for example, Jones County, which includes part of Abilene, and went for John McCain by 47 points in 2008, Mitt Romney by 55 points in 2012, and Trump by 65 points in 2016. The county GOP chair, Isaac Castro, said there is a lot more enthusiasm for Trump in Jones County compared to 4 years ago, when some local Republicans had reservations about his conservative credentials. I really think that this year he's probably going to do better, Castro said, adding that he was not worried about Trump losing statewide. You know, West Texas is going to be strong for him again. Unique Qualifications Are Reason for Re-election by James E. Fuller, District 1 candidate. My closing argument is my opening argument. I am James E. Fuller, AABAMA+, a 42-year resident of Midland. I am actively engaged in my community. As a public servant, I have spent 33 years working on the Midland ISD Board of Trustees. My qualifications to continue to serve as the elected representative of District 1 are significant. I am an educator of 52 years, 10 years in public education, Lubbock ISD, and 42 in higher education, Midland College. That my training and experience have informed my ability to serve in the arena of public school governance is without question. In addition, I continue to earn board member continuing education credit, National and Texas Association of School Boards, in order to remain current on numerous governance trustee issues. Also, I am a graduate of Leadership TASB with the earned certification of Master School Board Trustee. Transparency, commitment, candidness, integrity, honesty, and a sound work ethic are qualities I will continue to exercise as an experienced board member. I will continue to be in the community working for the success and good of all students in the district with a specific focus on students' academic performance. In addition, I will continue to advocate for all professional personnel and support personnel in the district. As a district, I realize, as an experienced board member, that we have a distance to go before all campuses are rated above average, B or better. I reiterate, I will continue to advocate and support the work being done in the area of system of great schools, the board's commitment to Lone Star governance, the reliance on academic initiatives that are data-driven, the secondary transformation, and the continuous upgrading of technology. Equity and equality should be the rule, not the exception, in the Midland Independent School District. They are primary factors that will contribute to improved academic performance, along with the consistent effort to eradicate systemic racism. Unlike my opponents, I have consistently discussed being qualified as a primary criteria for being an effective board member. They have not. Constituents of District 1, I solicit your vote. Re-elect James E. Fuller, Trustee, District 1, MISD.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, November 3, 2020. Gas prices. Midland-Odessa gas prices have fallen 5 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $1.97 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland-Odessa are 1 cent per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 36.5 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gas prices from November 2 going back 10 years. 2019, $2.34 a gallon. 2018, $2.96 a gallon. 2017, $2.43 a gallon. 2016, $2.04 a gallon. 2015, $1.92 a gallon. 2014, $2.89 a gallon. 2013, $3.12 a gallon. 2012, $3.47 a gallon. 2011, $3.41 a gallon. 2010, $2.69 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. October Weather Report. Average high, 80.2 degrees. Average low, 49.6 degrees. Average temperature, 64.9 degrees. Typical average for October, 64.8 degrees. Warmest high, 98 on October 10. Coldest low, 26 on October 27. Precipitation, 0.03 inch. Normal precipitation for October, 1.73 inches. Highest average wind speed, 18.3 miles per hour on October 26. Highest sustained wind speed, 33 miles per hour on October 15, 28. Highest gust speed, 40 miles per hour on 28. Source, National Weather Service. Election Day Weather History. Warmest high, 89 degrees in 1988. Coolest high temperature, 41 degrees in 2004. Coldest low, 29 degrees in 1932. Most precipitation, 0.88 inch in 2014. Most snow, 1 inch in 2000. Source, National Weather Service. Holy Trinity is collecting food for Jubilee Center. The Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity will be collecting food for the Jubilee Center. Donations may be dropped off at the door of the church's office 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. through November 17 and 5:30 through 7:30 p.m. November 18 at the parking lot. For a list of food needs or for more information, go to holytrinity.org. Call the church office at 683-4207 or Bert Bostick at 349-7882. ATC is closed because of COVID. The Midland College Advanced Technology Center, 3200 West Cuthbert Avenue, continues to be closed today for intensive cleaning because there have been COVID-reported cases among employees and students at that facility, according to a press release from MC. Classes are canceled and will be converted to virtual offerings where possible or postponed until the center reopens. Instructors will contact students with further instructions. Face the Race 5K will be a virtual event. The annual Face the Race 5K will be a virtual event this year, according to a press release from the Junior League of Midland. The 13th annual event is set for November 14 through 15, when participants will run on their own. The 5K benefits the Junior League's Face the Race mentoring program for Midland ISD junior high school girls. The 8-week after-school program, led by Junior League members, focuses on physical fitness, goal setting, women's health and wellness, self-esteem, and career education. Typically, each session concludes with the students and their mentors training for the Face the Race 5K. Because of COVID-19 restrictions, The weekly sessions have taken place live on the Junior League of Midland Facebook page. Synergy offering Election Week specials. The Synergy Cinemas in Midland and Odessa will be among those offering Election Week specials. These specials include happy hour pricing and matinee ticket pricing all day today through Saturday. Synergy will also host a canned food drive November 10 through 15, when patrons will receive a free movie ticket for every two canned food items donated. Texas Size Garage Sale continues. Senior Life has planned two additional days for the Texas Size Garage Sale, a fundraiser for Meals on Wheels. The sale is set for 9 through 11 a.m. and noon through 2 p.m. Friday and Saturday at 407 East Scarborough Drive. For more information, call 689-6693 or visit seniorlifemidland.org.
Obituaries for Tuesday, November 3rd. John Earl Underwood II. John Earl Underwood II, 76, passed away November 1st at his home in Robert Lee after fighting a courageous battle with cancer. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 3rd at the funeral home with family present from 6 to 7 p.m. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Mass will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th at Sacred Heart Cathedral. Burial will follow at Valley View Cemetery in Coke County. Services are under the direction of Schaefer Funeral Home, Sherwood Way. John was born April 30th, 1944 in Ranger, to the late John Dick Underwood and Olive Moffett Underwood. He married Betty Craig Underwood in 1964. Later, John married Theresa Percival Malden in 2004. John is survived by his wife, Theresa Underwood, sons Brian and wife Tammy Underwood of San Angelo and Rob Underwood of Fort Worth, daughters Kendra and husband Mark Burfiend of Castle Rock, Colorado, Christy and husband Russell Stalvey of Midland, Kimberly and husband Kyle Ellis of Brownwood, Laura Malden Smith of Midland, brother Richard and wife Lark Underwood of Midland, sister Luzette and husband Gary Petty of Whitesboro, mother-in-law Frances Erlene Percival of Robert Lee. Also many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, brothers and sisters-in-law, nieces and nephews. John is preceded in death by his parents, his brother Larry Underwood, a granddaughter, a brother-in-law, and sister-in-law. John Rufus Colgan, Jr. John Rufus Colgan, Jr. was born in Wichita Falls to John and Roberta Colgan, April 6, 1919, and in his 102nd year. John Rufus Buzz Colgan, Jr. passed away Wednesday, October 28th at the Lamon Lusk Sanchez, Texas State Veterans Home, as well as hospice in Big Spring. John was preceded in death by his mother and father, sisters Mary Jane and Louise, wife Martha Jean, and grandson John. John's surviving immediate family are his daughter, Susie of Odessa, his son John and daughter-in-law Terry of Odessa, his granddaughter Paige of Odessa, granddaughter-in-law Charmaine, and great-grandson David Jeremiah of Brooklyn, his son Paul and daughter-in-law Rebecca of Midland. John dedicated his physical remains to the University of Texas Health Sciences Center in San Antonio. A public memorial service will not be held. The family will hold a private memorial service at a later date. Jasmine Marie Melendez. Jasmine Marie Melendez, 15, of Midland, passed away October 22nd in Dallas. She was born October 24, 2004, to Esteban and Francesca Luna Melendez in Midland. She is survived by her parents, Esteban and Francesca Luna Melendez of Midland, three siblings, Esteban Melendez Jr., Alyssa Melendez, and Serena Melendez. maternal grandmother Arlene Luna, maternal grandfather Fernando Luna, maternal great-grandparents Irene Campoya and Efren, great-grandmother Elena Lopez, maternal uncle, maternal several uncles and aunts. Visitation will be held Wednesday, November 4th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland, and again Thursday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Rosary will be held Thursday, November 5th at 7 p.m. with Father Tim Hayter officiating. Funeral services will be Friday, November 6th at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church with Father Tim Hayter officiating. Burial will immediately follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Death notices. Jeffrey Gregory. Jeffrey Gregory, 60, of Midland, passed away October 24th at his home. He was born September 12, 1960, to Boyd and Alice Elaine Oliver Gregory in Dallas. He is survived by three siblings. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory. Michael Glenn Sanders. Michael Glenn Sanders, 59, of Midland, passed away Friday, October 30th. Visitation will be from 12 noon to 9 p.m. today, Tuesday, November 3rd, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Survivors include his wife, Marlene M. Sanders. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mikhail Meekins. Mikhail Meekins, 55, of Midland, passed away Thursday, October 29th. Services will be held at a later date. Arrangements with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by a son, Nicholas Meekins, two daughters, Kelsey Meekins and Amelia Meekins, his mother Regina Meekins, one grandson, and one brother. Wilda Warren. Mrs. Wilda Warren, 86, of Snyder, died Saturday, October 31st at Cogdell Memorial Hospital in Snyder. No services are planned at this time.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 3rd. It's Election Day 2020. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. today. You have one last chance to vote, and it is today, as everything from president to mayor of Odessa will be decided. Polls open at 7 a.m. and close at 7 p.m. in hotly contested races around both the country and in Odessa. Early voter numbers have broken records around Texas in 2020 and in Ector County. 35,513 were cast as early voting ended Friday. The Texas Tribune detailed that early voters have turned out statewide and that more than 9 million Texans had cast their ballots, making up 53.1% of the state's registered voters, surpassing the state's total votes cast in 2016. The Tribune also detailed that around 47.6% of those people voted in person and 5.6% have voted by mail. Ector County Elections Administrator Lisa Sertouche said that this year, early voter turnout has surpassed the 2016 total of 26,377 early voters. An Ector County Elections Office November 2016 cumulative report detailed that the combined number of early votes and Election Day votes came out to a total of 37,284 ballots cast. Sertouche said that 10,907 votes were cast on Election Day in 2016. Ector County voters will have a total of 25 polling places that will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Sertouche said that she believed all the vote centers will be steady and that all of the polling places will most likely have lines. Aside from the presidential election, this year's ballot contains multiple regional and city elections, including Odessa's city council, mayoral election, U.S. Representative for District 11, U.S. Senator, Railroad Commissioner, Chief Justice, Supreme Court, Justice Supreme Court spots, among others. Sheriff identifies teen killed in West Odessa by Royal McGregor. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American on Monday afternoon that an 18-year-old man was fatally shot at a party early Sunday morning in West Odessa. Griffiths said the victim, identified as Alec DeBosque, was 18. The fatal shooting happened around 1 a.m. Sunday in the 14,000 block of West Stagecoach Drive. Griffiths detailed over the phone on Monday afternoon that there was a party in the 14,000 block of West Stagecoach Drive. Griffiths continued to say that two individuals, the suspect and DeBosque, got into a confrontation that led to DeBosque being shot and killed. The ECSO press release stated DeBosque was pronounced dead at the scene and next of kin has been notified. DeBosque's body was sent to Tarrant County for an autopsy. As of 4:30 p.m. Monday, Griffiths stated no one has been arrested in connection to the fatal shooting. This case is still an ongoing investigation. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 6,663. Ector County negative, 26,427 out of 33,461 tested, with 371 pending, 121 deaths. Recovered, 5,486. Active, 1,056. ECISD daily cases, 15 students, 15 staff. Midland County, 5,778 confirmed cases, with 96 deaths. Texas, 909,257 confirmed, with 8,291,703 tested. Total Texas deaths, 18,077. U.S. cases, 9,551,147 total confirmed, and 236,902 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Quick hits. Free COVID-19 testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with the University of the Texas Permian Basin, has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing events at the following times, dates, and locations. Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Central Park East, 13th Street, parking lot. November 18, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Ratliff Stadium, parking lot, 1862 East Yukon Road. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event for Odessa and Ector County residents. First come, first serve. Residents must show proof of residency. Participants must remain in their vehicle with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. For more information, call 557-6557. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. In addition, free COVID-19 testing and flu shots are also available at Medical Center Hospital urgent care locations and the Odessa Regional Medical Center Community Clinic. For more information, call 557-6557. Pumpkin Smash Contest. The City of Odessa has scheduled a virtual Pumpkin Smash Contest through Sunday. Winners will be selected by the video with the most likes. Post your video on the comments of the Pumpkin Smash Contest post on the city's Facebook page. First place winner will receive a $50 Visa gift card and second place $25 gift card. To post your video, for details or more information, visit www.facebook.com/cityofodessatx. Community Art Gallery moves to FRC. Odessa Arts has partnered with the Family Resiliency Center of the Permian Basin, 4682 East University Boulevard, Suite D, to house the Community Art Gallery for 2020-21. Back in March, we were preparing to install the new Community Art Gallery at City Hall, but then COVID hit. Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said in a news release, We exhibited the works virtually, but we really wanted to find a space where community members could visit safely in person. That's when the Family Resiliency Center stepped up. Odessa Arts staff worked closely with FRC Director Chandra Quintanar and Odessa Arts board member Steve Goff to get the works delivered and installed. As part of our ongoing commitment to supporting the Odessa community, the Family Resiliency Center of the Permian Basin is honored to host the Community Art Gallery this year, said Quintanar. Goff, a photography instructor at Odessa College, was pleased that many of the artists exhibiting had ties to OC. 8 of the 20 artists are either former OC students or current faculty, staff. It makes me proud of the work we are doing at Odessa College. 20 pieces are installed at the FRC, and the community is welcome to view the pieces during FRC hours of operation and in a COVID-safe manner. Artwork is available for purchase directly from the artist. Neither the Family Resiliency Center nor Odessa Arts will facilitate any artwork sale. Harmony Public Schools begin open enrollment. Harmony Public Schools, the largest STEM-focused charter public school network in Texas, is now accepting open enrollment applications for the 2021-22 school year. Harmony offers a free public education with special emphasis on project-based STEM learning, college prep, career readiness and character education to pre-K through 12 students at 58 campuses statewide. Families new to Harmony can apply for enrollment through February 10, 2021 online at harmonytx.org/apply or at their nearest Harmony campus. To find a school near you, visit harmonytx.org/schools.php. To ensure fairness to all applicants, any Harmony campus that receives more applications than there are seats available will randomize all applications and select students via blind lottery. Each campus will set a date for their lottery within 2 weeks of the application deadline. Parents will be notified in the spring if their students have been selected for enrollment or placed on a waiting list. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 3rd. Donald Wayne Clark, 81, of Odessa, passed away Sunday, November 1st at his residence. He was the first baby boy born in Denver City to Wayne and Susie Clark on July 12, 1939. Family graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. A public memorial will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Randy Beard officiating. Don was welcomed to glory by his friend and Savior Jesus Christ and by his parents, Wayne and Susie Clark, his brothers A.B. Clark, Blue Eyes Clark, Ray Ward, Mill Massar, Vic Vickers, Taylor Van Zant, and Jim Winters, sisters Merle Massar, Anna Ward Morris, Mary Lou Vickers, Betty Sue Winters, and Chris Clark. Don is survived by his wife Nelda Ray Clark, daughters Donella Oliver and husband Butch, Sherry Harper and husband Bill, his sisters Daisy Van Zant, his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Memorials can be made to First Baptist Church Building Fund or the Boys and Girls Club of Odessa. Don would really just like you to go and watch a ball game and cheer for your favorite team. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Chester Ray Cleaver, Sr., 76, of Odessa, passed away on October 26 in Odessa. Chester was born February 21, 1944, in Odessa, to Jesse and Bertha Banks Cleaver. A pass-by visitation will be held on Tuesday, November 3rd, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held for Chester on Wednesday, November 4th, at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles section, at 1 p.m. Chester is preceded in death by his parents, first wife of 46 years, Fannie Mae Wilson Cleaver, brothers Laydell, Frank, Dallas, Carl, Jesse Lee, Alfred, and William Cleaver, sisters Vicki Cleaver and Stacy Adams. He is survived by his second wife, Charlene Landreth Cleaver of Odessa, sons Freddie Lee Kelly of Denver, Colorado, Chester Ray Cleaver, Jr. of Lorain, Texas, Alvin Franklin Felder III of Odessa, daughters Sharon Annette Cleaver of Odessa, Deborah Cleaver Wiggins and Tanya Jackson of San Antonio, Dale Lean Sheik of Denver, Texas, sister Bertha Marie Neely of Houston, brothers Greg and Rollo Cleaver of Fort Worth, Daryl and Andy Cleaver of Ranger, Texas, 15 grandchildren and 17 great-grandchildren, and a loving host of family, relatives, and friends. Maria Jesus Enchando, 49, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 27th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, November 6th, at Acres West 24-Hour Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Betty Jo Bassett, 83, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 29th, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. on Thursday, November 5th, at Crims Chapel Cemetery in Henderson, Texas. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Catalina Rivera Arrives Antillon, 88, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 27th, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, November 5th, at Iglesia del Camino, 903 South County Road, West, Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Humberto Porras is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Sheila Marie Smith, 48, died Wednesday, October 28th, in Fort Worth. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Eric Dale Twilliger, 51, of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 28th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled from 1 to 4 p.m. Thursday, November 5th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, November 2nd, 2020. This article is entitled, "Texas's Factory of Conservative Legislation May Be at Risk," by Paul J. Weber, Associated Press. Austin. Win or lose in Texas on Tuesday, Republicans will still run plenty of America's state capitals, maybe even most of them. "But Texas means more," said Amy Hagstrom Miller, owner of the abortion provider Whole Women's Health, who has taken lawsuits over new abortion restrictions in Texas to the U.S. Supreme Court. "As a generation of GOP dominance in Texas wobbles heading into Election Day, the tight polls and record-shattering early turnout of 9 million voters are unlike anything seen here before. Nowhere is the state's recent shift into a battleground more on display than in the fight for control of the state House of Representatives. For decades, the Texas legislature has been America's foremost factory of conservative legislation. Voting restrictions, expanded gun rights, immigration crackdowns, and limits on abortion have passed out of the state House. Other red states, Republicans like to say, have looked to the Texas Capitol as a leader. But that machine is showing signs of strain. Democrats are just 9 seats from seizing a House majority for the first time in 20 years. The GOP still has a commanding advantage in the state Senate, and Republican Governor Greg Abbott has 2 more years in office, which would leave Democrats little way of reversing laws they have fought in recent sessions. But a divided Texas legislature could still spell an end to the intense era of culture wars and bitterly divisive laws that have made the state capitol an arena for some of the nation's most explosive battles. It forces all sides to find their better angels," said Democratic Representative Trey Martinez Fisher, whose first year in the House in 2001 was also the last time his party ran the chamber. At a minimum, the tone and tenor of the discussion will instantly change. Martinez Fisher has already declared his candidacy for House Speaker and would become the first Latino in Texas to hold the position if he won. So did Texas's longest-serving female lawmaker, Democratic Representative Sanfronia Thompson, who would be Texas's first House Speaker who is female or black. Winning the House is widely viewed as Democrats' best chance in what has been an unusually competitive election year in Texas. On Friday, the Democratic vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris stopped in Houston, Fort Worth, and McAllen along the border with Mexico for an 11th-hour campaign swing in a state where Democrat Joe Biden has spent few resources. Republican Senator John Cornyn is also in a re-election battle with Democrat MJ Hager. Texas is one of a number of states where Republicans are on the defense in state houses. They hold full control in more than half of the nation's legislatures, but are in closely contested fights in states including Florida, Georgia, Iowa, and Minnesota. Driving urgent statehouse battles across the U.S., this cycle is the fact that legislatures next year will begin drawing new voting maps based on the 2020 census, which can give parties a political edge for the next decade. Outside groups have poured tens of millions of dollars into Texas with that goal in mind. Underscoring the high stakes, one Democratic challenger for a GOP House seat in Dallas reported raising more than $1 million since late September alone. Republicans are taking the threat to their Texas majority seriously, but also insist they are not as vulnerable as Democrats make it seem.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.